We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
College football preseason is here. We'll get into it on this edition of the Ziggy Cast.
This is the BGSU Ziggy Cast from Learfield, your home for Falcons updates, interviews, previews, and highlights. Now, here is your host, Todd Walker.
Well, we're back. Time to talk football as the college football preseason is officially underway, with the various conferences holding their media preseason get-togethers. The MAC held theirs in Detroit on July 20th, and of course I was there, and we'll have several interviews to get to from that as part of this Ziggy Cast. We'll hear from Falcon football players Sam Neveroff and Jordan Anderson. Also, of course, we'll hear from Coach Scott Leffler. In addition, I interviewed Mid-American Conference Commissioner John Steinbrecher and the MAC and Big Ten Coordinator of Officials, Bill Carollo. So we'll have all of those interviews for you coming up here on this edition of the Ziggy Cast. Just a reminder, BGSU opens the season on a Thursday night. Falcons will play at Tennessee for the first time ever, and that is Thursday night, September 2. And then the Falcons will have their home opener the following Saturday, September 11th, against South Alabama. Also, as we approach the season, a reminder, we'll be back at Frickers this year for our coaches' shows every Monday night in person. First coaches' show will be Monday, August 30th. As far as the radio broadcasts, your team is back. Yours truly, along with analyst John Gibson and sideline reporter Kevin Peel, will bring every game to you here on the Falcon Sports Radio Network. Well, not here, because this is our podcast, but you know what I mean, on our affiliate stations and online as well. So without further ado, let's get right into our interviews from MAC Football Media Day, and let's start with our Falcon football players, beginning with guard Sam Neveroff.
When we look at the offensive line, you're one of the most senior guys, if not the most senior. Is that right?
Yeah, I am. I am the oldest on the offensive line. Yes, going into my fifth season here at BG.
I know you never even thought that was possible when you started, right?
No, I mean, it's gone by quick. That's all I have to say about that. I mean, it's definitely, the years definitely do fly by, and it feels like yesterday I was just walking into the doors of, you know, the SIBO Center.
How does it feel to be looked at as a mentor? I assume you are, being the oldest guy on the line and having played in a lot more games than any of these other guys. Do guys look to you at that O-line as a leader?
I believe they do, but also they're, you know, starting to build that confidence within themselves also to, you know, they don't have to lean on me as much. They kind of, you know, are understanding how things work and whatnot and kind of just, you know, taking it and running with it also.
When you look at how things are working out with the offensive line, it's a position group that has kind of been thin in the ranks for a couple of years. They've tried to recruit it heavily. When you look at this year's group, are we where you'd like to be with numbers and a number of guys to work with, or is it still not where it really needs to be?
I would say with numbers wise, I mean I think we have the guys. Just need to get them, you know, into, I guess, playing shape. You know, helping them understand, you know, what we're trying to do and trying to get them physically ready with these summer workouts. That's just been number one focus here at BG.
Well, now entering Coach Leffler's third year, presumably a third go-round with the same offense and the same nomenclature and the same coaching staff, basically. You feel a lot more comfortable with that part of it all coming into a fresh season now?
Yes, and this year definitely just getting, you know, I think now we definitely understand each other, what we're trying to do and what the coaches are trying to do, and just kind of taking that from them and running with it. I think this year we definitely have it more, a better understanding of what they're, you know, trying to do.
Try to put into words, if you can, how important it's been since the end of last year to have somewhat a normal offseason. I mean, you're able to get together and do things in a fairly normal fashion since the end of last football season. Try to contrast it from the COVID year to this year, how much smoother it is.
Definitely a lot smoother. Doesn't feel like we're in the twilight zone the whole time. Doesn't feel like chaos. You know, there's a lot more just getting back to normal. I never thought it would have felt so good, and never, you know, kind of took that for granted in the years before. But with last year, with how everything went, definitely been missing, you know, having a traditional, you know, winter workout to spring ball to summer conditioning, and then now going back into, you know, fall camp and having a actual season is definitely something we've been looking forward to.
You know, it's said a lot that maybe the most important part of a football team as far as camaraderie and familiarity and working together is the offensive line. Do you think that can pay dividends this year for you and your group?
Yeah, I think we're definitely trying to move as one in unison and trying to create that chemistry within each other to basically have, you know, one goal in sight and move together in unison towards that goal.
Well, as we think about you specifically then, how do you feel you've improved since last year as you come into your fifth year now in the program?
Shaved a couple of pounds off. Feel a little bit quicker now. But working on that, the speed and the physicality and, you know, strength and whatnot, just been hammering away at that in hopes, you know, to help me improve in my game.
We talked earlier that you'll be playing at the left guard spot, and that's pretty much where you want to stay. And is part of that the reason why you tried to slim down a little bit, get a little bit more lithe, if you will, a little more nimble?
Yeah, I mean, with, you know, trying to be I guess, nimble and having that strength, I mean, it definitely helps to play that position while also trying to keep the size that I have. But, yeah, that's just in an effort to, one, feel more comfortable at that spot, and two, just to kind of, I guess, anchor that position.
So as we move toward camp now, first for you specifically and then for the O-line as a group, what are some things that need to get done in camp here?
For myself, I would say I need to work on, I guess, being a vocal leader and trying to, you know, take the leadership role away from the coaches and me and the upperclassmen need to, you know, work on that. As a group, just need to work with confidence, you know, study the playbook, you know, lift to, you know, build strength so that we build that confidence within in ourselves that, you know, where that everyone knows that they're supposed to be here and when we go out, you know, play games, that everyone knows what they're doing and believes that they have the ability to do it.
Speaking of camp, you expect it to be pretty physical, spirited camp. It seems like that would almost be mandatory with the makeup of the roster. Is that what we should anticipate?
Yeah, definitely going to be a lot more physical, especially with last year going through, I guess, that makeshift camp after it got canceled. But having that classic August training camp, I think definitely it's going to be a lot more physical than it's been in years past.
Now, we mentioned you're a fifth-year guy. Where are you in your academic progress? Are you thinking about what's next already with academics? Have you graduated? Are you set to graduate? Give us a progress report.
I'm set to graduate in December, and then from there, I don't have much of a plan. We'll see if the sixth-year eligibility, if you know, that's in my graduate plan or not, but that's just something to see when we get there.
What is your major?
Construction management.
Well, there'll be plenty of things to build, whether it's the next year or the following year. Sam, we appreciate you taking time with us. Good luck this season.
Thank you.
Jordan Anderson joins us now from Mac Football Media Day. Jordan, we were sort of joking around about it earlier with this is just your third year in the program, but being one of the more senior players on the team, I guess you've been thrust into a bit of a leadership role sort of by default, right?
Yeah, I have. And it's nothing new to me. I've been a leader all my life with just in the Little League and in high school. So I'm happy to be a leader. I'm happy to change the program around and bring us back to normal and bring us back good.
Of course, the defensive backfield is an area that the past couple of years we've seen, unfortunately, a lot of injuries, and some guys are pressed into playing maybe before they were ready, and guys have had to move positions. As you come into this season, I think you're envisioning safety is pretty much where you're going to be, right?
Yep, safety. And for some time, I could play nickel, but just to help around. But basically, just me playing in the box or me going around up top is good at safety. So I'm basically, that's my main position.
One thing that can pay off later with the situation I was just talking about is a lot of different guys have seen playing time. Maybe it wasn't a ton of playing time, but all that nervousness about not having played before is gone. A little experience. Is that something that maybe this group will be able to draw on this year collectively?
Yeah, possibly it could be. If me, just by me being being able to relate to that, just being having a lot of playing time and not being so nervous as the younger guys are, it's probably going to happen just a little bit in the first game. But just honestly, I'll just tell them guys, like, after the first couple of plays, it's just football, and we're going to play just like we're going to play. So it's going to happen just in the first few games for real.
Well, in addition to yourself, there are a couple other guys that are back that have played. Deonta Burns jumps to mind. Talk about some of the vets that are back with you.
Yeah, one of them guys, Deonta Burns, one of the hard-working guys of the program, one of the hardest-working guys I've seen. We have Cy Dabney. He's another guy in the backfield with us. Had a lot of injuries in his career earlier, but now he's been healthy and back with us for the past 2 years, so he's going to help out a lot. We have guys that transferred that's played a lot with Devon Ferguson. He's played in the Power Five, so he's got a lot of highlights and production under his belt as far as DB areas. Yeah, those are the guys that are productive and have games under their belt for real.
Well, when you talk about your own personal development here since 2020's the truncated season to getting ready for this season, where do you think you've improved the most personally?
Me, I just improved on my awareness of the game and me knowing all the spots that can help me as far as not just helping me but helping my teammates too. We're all being synced on the field. And just me with my flexibility and my speed, honestly, you know, me being a safety, having to check inside in the slot all the time, and those are the quickest guys on the field. You know, that's what I pride myself on, is being more fast and being more flexible. So I feel like that helped. I've worked on that. And also just me being more consistent, making plays all over the field, that's going to help us and that's going to help me as well.
Well, let's project a little toward camp now, a couple of weeks away. What are some of the goals personally, but also for the group, the DBs? What are some things you want to see happen in camp to get you guys ready for the season?
For the DBs, I just want to see us fly around and make plays and always have our energy up. Energy is always something that we need. Coach always talks about having energy on the field and always having fun, because that's the main point of the game. We're going to have fun while we're doing what we love. Also, I just want to see us make plays and honestly not get down on ourselves, because honestly, you know, DB is one of the hardest positions on the field and one of the most criticized positions on the field. Either you can be loved off of one play or you can be hated off one play, and you can't let that get to your head. So I just want my guys to basically just play the next play and forget about the previous play, honestly. With me being personal, I just want to continue on being more of a leader and helping our team grow and helping our defense grow, so we can become a team that we know we can be, and we can become the team that Bowling Green wants to be and have BG back on the map.
As part of that, you're here with this media event today. That's generally reserved for guys who are leaders. What do you draw from this experience today? Sort of a new thing for you. Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. It's great to see all the guys from other teams come around. I see everybody in their best dress with the suits and stuff. But it's all a good experience to me. I've had interviews before, but not this many interviews and cameras, so it was a nice experience. I enjoyed myself. Hopefully I'll be back and be in this position more often.
Jordan, we appreciate you taking time. Good luck this season.
Thank you.
Talking now with head coach Scott Loeffler, getting ready for the 2021 football season. And coach, before we break down the football team, I know everybody's just not ready to get back in the normal routine. Even this Mac Media Day can be a bit monotonous, but sort of nice after not doing this last year.
I've never been more fired up to talk to the media ever. No, it's been it's good to see people. It's good to be in front of people. The computer world was great. We've learned a ton from it. There's a lot of advances that we've done with recruiting in regards to how to do business better. But to say that sitting and talking to people over the computer is cool, it's not. It's great to be in front of people and see people's true reactions. And so it's nice. So it's great to be back.
With that said, let's jump right into analyzing your football team coming in. I just want to kind of go group by group here. Let's start with the big one, the quarterbacks. Matt McDonald played for you last year, was admittedly banged up at least the last half of the year, maybe the whole year. You've got some pretty highly touted guys coming in from what you've told us when you recruited them. So what's it look like with the quarterback spot in camp here?
You know what? I'm excited about it. We got some youth, which is going to push Matthew, which is great. And I know you're going to see a total different guy. And I've always said this, you got to go through a little bit of hell at that position to get to where you want to go. And we did. We weren't ready to protect. We weren't ready to run routes. Matt went outside the box and tried to make up for all of that. And when you do that, you're not going to be very good. Tom Brady can't do that. Drew Brees can't do that. And he learned real quick that you better worry about what you can control, because you might get knocked down because of a bad protection, but when that moment comes that you need to make that play, you need to make it. And it was good for our youth to see it. It was good for him to see it. It sucked in every aspect of the word. But in all actuality, as miserable as that year was, we're going to look back and we're going to go, thank goodness it happened, because there's a lot of lessons that we got to learn without us costing one thing in terms of eligibility.
So clearly Matt McDonald is the guy you expect to be your quarterback moving forward, despite the fact that really, I mean, he's played 5 games and the rest of you guys haven't played any, but he's the man.
We'll see. You know, I mean, obviously we're going to keep it competitive throughout training camp. We've got some youth that we really, really like. But like 75% of our team, Todd, it's remarkable. Tucker Melton's never been through a training camp. None of these guys have been through a training camp yet. I want to say 3/4 of our team, whenever I ask who's been through a true fall, none of them have. So with time, those guys are going to be really good players for sure. And it's going to be the theme, I think, throughout this whole interview. Youth, youth, and more youth.
Yeah, and let's detour to the overall roster for just a moment to buttress that point. I think I saw you have 73 players that have 4 or 5 years of eligibility remaining. Clearly, some of your more accomplished veterans that you had that could have returned maybe chose to end their careers or go elsewhere. So unlike a lot of teams, you haven't really gained all that much experience from last year to this.
No, we haven't. We the ones that had the ability to play in those five games, obviously it was awesome. But we are extremely young. I like where they're at in terms of their mentality. The thing that they're missing and our biggest challenge right now is we're a coach-driven team. We're not a player-driven team because we're so young. And what they're learning right now is they're working really, really hard in the framework of when we have them. But to be great and to be elite, you got to do different things, and you got to work extra, and you got to do this. And none of them understand that until they're really in the fray. And most of the time, a freshman or a sophomore goes, "Man, this is the hardest thing known to man." And I'm in my framework of working the business hours that I'm supposed to. But then they look and they watch the older guys working extra, and they trickle along. We have no one for them to watch, and you know, it's influencing and teaching those young guys of this is what it really looks like to be a championship team.
Well, let's go to the guys that protect your quarterbacks. As you hinted at in your talk of the quarterbacks, O-line last year had its issues. Sam Neveroff was here with us today. He's sort of the building block for your O-line. It's been a area of emphasis for you recruiting, trying to build the ranks. How much improvement can you expect from your front five?
I think they'll improve immensely. Do I think they're going to be where they need to be? No, they're still too young. But you'll see a different group. The right tackle was 255 pounds last year. He's 305 right now. The left tackle was 255 pounds. He's now 285. So you're going to see a little bit different group trot out there. And they got to be in the fray. They got to be in what it looks like, and they got to learn real quick that you got to be big, you got to be strong, you got to have experience. And when that group, because they are athletic, once that group gets older and figures it out, we're gonna have a heck of an offensive line. And that's the whole emphasis that we've been making these 2 years is get the fronts right. Those take the longest. Those sometimes take 4 years to get them right. And we get the fronts right. We go get recruit some speed and some guys that can score. We'll get back to where we need to be.
Part of the fronts, the tight ends is a position of emphasis in your offense. Of course, Quentin Morris had thrived in that position the last couple of years. He has moved on, but you've brought in some talented guys to try and shore up that position. Give me your rundown on your tight end.
I love them. I think that tight end group down the road is going to be pretty good. I think Christian Sims has all the ability of a Quentin Morris and maybe some more. I just think that whole entire group from our end-line guys to our adjusters, they've got a chance in the near future to be really special. And in this offense, we got to have tight ends that can do a lot of different things. They're smart, they're tough, they're athletic. Again, they just need to learn.
And when you're talking there about your end guys and your adjuster guys, you run your tight ends, one guy sort of stays on the end of the line, the other guy you flop around kind of like Q.
Yeah, we put them everywhere, and we think we may have a situation where we could have both of those guys be everywhere known to man, and that's whenever you got problems. Whenever you could put a guy on the end line that you think is not supposed to be, and then you split them out and all that, that becomes a pain in the rear end. Defenses don't like it. They hate 12 personnel. They hate 13 personnel. I learned that from being on the defensive side of the ball. It's not fun because you could do a lot. And as this team develops, I know that we've got the right formula. It's just we got to get some experience and get through. We're halfway through. I mean, regardless of what we said, we are exactly halfway through of what we started. And I wish we were at the end where we can go, hey, we're going to go win this thing. It's part of the process.
Let's talk about the other guys that catch the balls, your wide receivers then, also an area of extreme youth. The last couple of years we've seen the veterans maybe not live up to what you thought they might. And what's that group look like this year?
Different. Broden has got to become a big-time player. He's got the ability. He's a 4'5 kid. He's 6'5.5. Kinsley got to learn what college football was all about. Embry's the same way. We brought in Austin Osborne, a guy that can run, a guy that has strength, a guy that can lead that room. And the young fellas that we recruited in the 21 class are pretty good. We're young in that area. I'm thinking that we're one class away from that room really being good. We'll finally have depth there. and their mentality is different. You know, we put a big emphasis on perimeter blocking, and they didn't block well, and they'll block well this year. And you know, that's a typical young guy. I was brought here to catch it, so which you are. Don't get me wrong. We love to throw it to you, but you got to be able to block too.
Let's talk about the running backs. A situation last year where you've got some production here and there out of some guys. Of course, Andrew Clare is gone now, but talk about your returning running backs and how many we might see fairly regularly.
Yeah, Terrion Stewart will lead that charge. He's talented. Needs to get better in protection. With the ball in his hands, he's really good. But some of those times that Matt McDonald was absolutely murdered, Terrion wasn't even in the hemisphere of what he was supposed to do. So we're really making a big emphasis on him knowing the protections. We know he can run the ball. The Jiason Patterson kid out of Florida that we had during training camp, good player, a really good player. And we think Nick Mosley, the kid that just got onto campus, has the ability to be a really good player. Trayvon Raymore we will not see this year because of an injury. He's out the entire year. And those three young guys in particular, pretty good players. Yeah.
Let's flip it over to the defensive side then. Again, up front, it's similar to what you've talked about with your O-line. You've been trying to recruit numbers there, build up the ranks, and where do we stand with that coming into this year?
Yeah, real similar to the offensive line. We like the talent now. Young. Todd, I think you know the theme, young.
Yeah.
But we think over time these guys have got a chance. They're finally, the rear ends look the way the rear ends are supposed to look. They're bigger, and you could build upon them. Some of the young kids that we brought in, what we've seen in condition, they can run, which is good. But we have to run the ball, and we have to stop the run. Last year was embarrassing. We couldn't stop the run to save our lives. I think we were the number one pass defense in America, but they never threw it. They ran the ball at will. And you can't win football games whenever you can't run it. You're turning the ball over, and you got to stop the run. So the philosophy is get the fronts right. It might take 2 to 3 years to get those fronts right. Go get some skill that can cover and go get some skill that can score, and we'll be back.
On the D-line, might it help, too, that guys can play more the position they're built for? I know last year guys ended up having to play out of position.
Yeah, we finally have got, if you look at our depth, we're finally getting guys that fit the mold of what we want to do. And just like I said, they're big. They look the part. Need to get stronger, obviously, but making headway.
Well, you talked about getting guys to cover. Let's jump a level, go to the defensive backfield. You had Jordan Anderson here at Media Day. He's a veteran coming back. Dayotta Burns, a JUCO, decided to come back for another year. So you've got a little bit of experience back there, but give me your thoughts on the DB crew.
Yeah, we need to tackle better back there. When we did fit the run properly up front, our safeties didn't tackle well, and we need to tackle better. We brought in a transfer from Kansas, Davon Ferguson. He's really in a perfect world, we'd love to put him at safety. He is a tackling machine, but we're so young at corner, we're going to start him at corner, and the plan would be eventually to move someone in the corner position, get him back to his home, and then you got Jordan and Ferguson who can play. We're still ultra thin there. And our safety corner situation, that's our number one. I think we're taking 6 defensive backs in this class in regards to fixing those holes. We're planning on taking 3 to 4 high school kids and at least 2 transfers.
Well, let's talk about linebackers then. Colby Coleman could have come back, has gone elsewhere, but you've got some guys that saw some action last year. Break down the linebacker.
Darren Anderson will lead that crew. He's got the most experience. We brought in Bryce Brand, transfer from West Virginia that really fits our mold. He'll help immediately. He'll be immediate help for our defensive linebacker position. Lots of youth, though. Fortune Woods. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Aaron Washington. I mean, there are some puppies back there. But, again, the positive is they can run. And whenever you can run, you can teach. And they're instinctive. We'll be better there. We're still building that position too, but we're building every position right now. I mean, this is not a – the cool thing about it is going to work, at least that you can go, okay, these guys we can develop into champions down the road. And then you get some speed in here, and the next thing you know, you're pretty good.
Let's not forget about special teams. That can be a big difference, even if you're struggling in other areas. How do you feel about the kick and return games?
I think our return game will be totally different because we got some young guys that they can run, that we'll put back there that can flat run. And the kicking game, I think, is going to be – Nerano, I mean, he's one of the best punters in this conference. Coach Ligashevsky is a vet. He's as good as they come. We can't ask for better coaching at that at that phase of football. He'll steal a few things and make a few plays for us just by his coaching, in my opinion. And but we've got good kickers, which is great. And I think the biggest thing that you will see is our return game will finally be better.
Coach, final thought. Usually we come to these things and they release the poll, and whoever gets picked to win it, they say, it doesn't mean anything. But when you get picked last, do you try and use that for motivation, either for yourself, your staff, the team, or does it matter?
Typically, it's the first place that I've ever been that we were picked last. I've been at places that, you know, you're 1, 2, 3 in the country and all that other stuff. They definitely don't matter whenever you get picked 1, 2, and 3. And I had no idea that we were picked last. I don't care. There's so much other things that we need to do right now, and that's out of our control. And I could care less about that when we are number one, or where I just care less. It means nothing to us. No one ever remembers where you were picked, and but we should be picked there right now. We haven't been a productive program here in some time, and there will be light here soon, and we're going to do things the right way. And once it gets back, we'll look back, and it'll be. When we're lifting a trophy in this stadium, it'll be the most rewarding thing that our staff, myself, our players have ever been a part of. And going from where we were, we'll look back at where we were at and where we went, and it'll be pretty cool.
Let me follow up with one more thing. You mentioned Coach Ligashevsky a little bit, but you also have a new defensive coordinator. Tell the folks about him and what may change philosophically, if anything.
Yeah, Eric is comes from a really good tree of coaches. His dad was a great coach. The kids love Elu. They love him, and they'll play really hard for him. And he's a bright guy. He's got a really, really good room in terms of he's got a good staff. I mean, that staff in there, they're tight. They do things the right way. They've got each other's back, and it trickles right down to the players. And I think with time, I think they're going to be what we want, you know. We're just young, Todd.
Still climbing that hill, still building that rocket, right?
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Well, give us a date. When do you guys put the pads on for the first time for real in camp?
You know what? It's so different now. These new rules that they implemented in training camp are completely foreign to all of us. There's now a more extended acclimation period. There's only you're only allowed 9 practices in full pads. You're only allowed 9 practices in shoulder pads and helmets, and the rest have got to be in helmets. So it's very different than that we're ever. You're only allowed to scrimmage 75 minutes, and you're only allowed 2 of them. It's just a different deal, and I think we've got a great plan. I think everyone's copycatting and talking to each other how they're going to do it. And at the end of the day, what I want to do is I want to have a hard training camp, no question about it, because of our youth. But I want to make sure that we get to the season healthy so we can have 12 weeks of developing these guys. I don't want 15 guys sitting on the sidelines that we can't develop. These next 17 weeks, 5 weeks, 4 weeks of training camp, and 12 weeks during the season is really important. We haven't had that development piece at all, so this is really important. I want to have a tough training camp, but I also want to get them to the season.
Coach, as always, appreciate your time. Good luck this season.
You're the best, Todd. Awesome, man.
At MAC Media Day at Ford Field in Detroit, Bill Carollo is the MAC coordinator of officials, and usually we talk about maybe some rules changes or points of emphasis, but this year, points of emphasis, let's get back to normal. That'd be nice, huh?
Yeah, that exactly, Todd. Thank you. You know, we went through a lot of ups and downs, just like the players and the coaches did last year with COVID. We learned a lot of good things coming out of that as far as training, off-season, what we're going to do. And we've got a season in, so I congratulated the coaches yesterday on getting through the season, making it to the end, having a championship game, having some success in the bowl games, et cetera. But now this year we're kind of trending toward back to normal. But we are going to – the things we learned during the COVID year, if you will, we're going to continue with some of the training, and we can get to more people the same message via technology. But we are going to – in August now, we're going to get our officials back on the field, interacting with the players, the coaches, before the season starts. And we're really excited to get our feet on the grass on the field.
Without getting too deep in the weeds of minutia and stuff, what are some of the things you're referring to that were COVID maybe implemented that – kind of worked or were kind of to the positive that could carry on for officials?
Well, I think you'll see more and more on the training side of it. We don't have to bring 300 people into Chicago, let's say, and bring all my MAC officials, the Big Ten officials, you know, the Missouri Valley officials, etc., all my different conferences. And that's so last week we had an all-day, 2-day actually training session with 331 officials, all with technology, and it worked perfect. And replay, we're looking at video, we're going through PowerPoints, we're going through examples of what we want, the philosophies, the editorial changes on the rules to make sure everyone, I mean, is perfect on the rules and they understand what we want and don't want. And of course, we always go back to the two areas I would say we spent a lot of time on, which would be normal and has nothing probably to do with COVID, is player safety. I mean, COVID has player safety implications. If they tested positive, they wouldn't be playing. But now today I'm talking about what we've done in the last 5 years on rules changes, and it has to do with player safety, high hits to the quarterback, you know, high hits to the punt returner trying to return. And we've taken out the big explosive that made the top, you know, ESPN's top hits, you know, that week. Now they're all illegal, right? Then we took away the low hits. Then we're taking away low blocks outside the tackle box. Now we're taking away blindside blocks. So if you see what we're doing on the rules, it all has to do with player safety. This is an off year this year, but we're still tweaking, and we'll probably make some more changes next year on where you can block low on the field. And we're going to gather the empirical data that says it's dangerous to block low. We know it's on special teams, running 40 yards downfield, full speed, and hitting a guy low. If you don't see him coming, even though it's not a blindside block, even straight on, you can't go low. It's a dangerous, and we've had a lot of injuries. So we're going to pull all that, and then we'll make some decisions on that for next year. And the other piece, I would say, Todd, that's really important is the image of the game. We're trying to make sure that we're at a high, high professional level, a game, whether it's the MAC or Big Ten or any conference across the country. And so that is, player safety is one, but players, unsportsmanlike conduct, taunting their opponent, even coaches leaving the coach's box, you know, it's a bad look, it's a bad image for the game, even though they're upset, maybe even if the call is wrong. I mean, there's accountability, you know, it may be wrong and there's accountability for my officials, but the coaches can't come out to the numbers and challenge a call. It's a flag. And they can't leave. We've narrowed the coach's box from the 15-yard line last year because of COVID. We brought it back to the 20. But I told the coaches yesterday, I says, just so you know, you cannot challenge a pass interference in the end zone down at the 15-yard line. You can't be yelling at the back judge because maybe he missed it, or maybe he wanted the flag and we didn't call it, etc. So the image of the game is really important, and I have to say the coaches in this conference, they're outstanding. I mean, it's not a hard problem, but when I looked at the bowl games last year as a rules and competition committee member, we weren't as consistent as we'd like in that game, you know. And sometimes there's a lot of pressure on the coaches, and they get excited, but the reality is I told the coaches, we're going to emphasize this, player safety and coaches and players' behavior. It's important for the game.
So with that said, I would imagine week one we're going to see if it's borderline with coaches out in the field, they're probably going to get flagged just to sort of make sure they understand that outside the box is outside the box, and then hopefully the message sinks in, right?
Well, when we have a point of emphasis, you'll see it a little tighter at the beginning of the season, and hopefully – It's not like we change our philosophy, but they get the message. They meant it. When we had media days and we met with the coaches last, or my officials came in in August and they spoke to the team. I mean, I gave the same message to the players too. I'm just telling you, you can't do that. You can't walk over the guy. You can't look at the. You can't direct anything toward your opponent to show them up. You're going to get a flag. You're walking in for a touchdown, and you turn and you say bye-bye as you go into the end zone because, it used to be we'll give you the touchdown and penalize you on the kickoff. Now we're taking away the touchdown. You know, so there's some big ramifications if they don't follow that. But hopefully we don't have a rash of flags the week one, and we get to them in August. We get to them, at the media days, our last face-to-face with all the coaches together. And then when our crews go out to the field and they – talk to the coaches and talk to the players, they're going to get the same consistent message, and hopefully we'll eliminate those extra flags on the week one. But someone will test us and they'll say, did Carollo really mean it? The answer is yes, we're going to throw the flag.
We're talking with Bill Carollo, MAC coordinator of officials, also does that for the Big Ten. What about rules changes or procedures changes, though, for this year? The overtime rule, I believe, has changed,
correct.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, this is an off year, and we talk about player safety, players' health and safety. And we looked at all the overtimes last year. I don't have all the data on there. But on the average overtime last 2 years, I should say, we've averaged, took a look at that, and we found, and we tweaked it the year before, we found that if the first overtime period is going to be exactly the same, as the fans and coaches. You have the scheme and the play, how many plays. You got to score, right? So they'll work on that. But when we get to the second overtime, so then we're going to force the teams that you score, you only can go for 2 points. We're going to put the ball at the three-yard line, and you got one shot at the two-point conversion. And if we go to the third overtime, we're just going to put the ball at the three-yard line. We're not going to have any snap. We have one. You get one, barring any penalty. We might repeat the down. They're going to have one shot at the 3 yard line to go in. And every inning or every overtime period after that, it's going to be that. And we'll probably eliminate about 15 or 16 plays on the average. We're going to take out of an overtime game. And that goes back to player safety, because the data said that they have more injuries. The players are tired. It's a longer game. Not that. Doesn't matter to the officials, doesn't matter to the coaches, but the players who are doing the work at the end of the game, they have a tendency to maybe get injured more when they're tired, and that's the reason why we made that. It's a player safety change.
So that from the 3 yard line, beginning with the third overtime, you get one snap, you score a touchdown, or you don't. And then if you do score, you have to run the same play essentially again for a 2 point try.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So it's good. It'll speed it up. Time-wise, and I think we don't want ties in football, but at the same time, we want to make sure that this extra, and you see at the pro levels too, they're cutting back the number of minutes on overtime. The NFL has done some things, and we're trying to be as efficient as possible, but it's a pretty exciting game, And, the other thing we're talking about, there's a lot of injuries on kickoffs and special teams. We still like the punt returner. We still like the 100-yard kickoff return. And those are dangerous plays. We've had a lot of – but we've changed rules, low blocks, blindside blocks, et cetera, besides the normal targeting stuff. And we want to make sure that when you take that running speed 40 yards downfield and you blow up the guy or hit the guy high or low, we do get a lot more injuries in that, especially the blindside blocks. So you'll see there's emphasis on that because it might be away from the play, and you got most of our officials watching the general area of the return and where the blocks are, and maybe he's 40 yards away. Someone has to watch the guy 40 yards away for a blindside block.
We're talking with Bill Carollo, coordinator of MAC and Big Ten officials for the upcoming college football season. Any changes to what can be reviewed by replay or replay procedures, or will that continue as it has been?
Yeah, we had one, I'd say, minor change, and it has to do with the clock. So most people don't understand when you put time back on the clock, when you have a reverse zone, it's a running clock to a stop clock. So the example might be, we ruled on the field catch, and he continued downfield 10 yards, and 15 seconds went off the clock before he went out of bounds. Replay stops it, or the coach challenges it and takes a look at it and says, the ball skipped in there. He didn't actually catch it. So we'd spend an extra 15, 20 seconds trying to figure out the clock. Where was it when the ball touched the ground? Incomplete pass. That's the correct call, but let's fix the clock because it should have. If we got it right on the field, we would have said incomplete and stop it there, and the clock would have stopped. So we were spending too much time, adding too much time to replay the dead time that not really playing, that we're waiting with replay to make that final decision. We've taken that out. So we only will change the clock on a reversal to a stop clock under 2 minutes in the first half or under 5 minutes in the second, when the clock is really important. If it's first quarter, 10-minute mark, no one really cares. Coaches even don't care if we put 6 seconds back on the clock. You know, it's fair. So that's one area that we did. And there are a couple other scenarios that we clarified with regard to replay, a couple play situations but it all has to do with the clock, you know, fixing the clock. And so it's more editorial, you know, trying to make sure that a philosophy change in replay. We just want to get it right. We want to use common sense and be as efficient as possible in the replay booth. The times in replay have been creeping up from a minute to almost a minute and a half. And we did put in the rules, do not go over 2 minutes. I mean, you can, but that's the guideline. If you go over 2 minutes, then the play should probably stand. You've looked at it long enough, you looked at every angle, and there's no more video to come, so end the video there.
Bill, we appreciate your time. Hopefully we don't hear much about officiating this coming season.
Yeah, I agree with you. We like to be under the radar if we can. Thank you.
We're visiting with MAC Commissioner John Steinbrecher, and he, of course, addressed the assembled media and players and coaches and other dignitaries at the MAC media event. And I think it would be fair to say that you took the occasion to criticize the NCAA fairly widely, or at least suggest some things they could do better. Seemed very pointed. Talk to me about your comment.
Well, part of it is we're all the NCAA. We need to do some things better. We've not been as strategic as we could have been. We focus, I think, on things that really aren't all that important when you get down to it. And so we've got to take a bigger picture view of things and try and get out of our way more often than not. Easier said than done, but we've got to do a better job, just plain and simple. We've got to be more innovative. We've got to be more creative. We're trying to do something that's really challenging. In Division I, we have 350-odd institutions. We have institutions with budgets of $9 million, and we have budgets of $250 million. And we're trying to all compete under the same rules and regulations. There's got to be some flexibility in there on some things, and there's got to be some give and take. And we're coming into an era where those questions are going to start being asked. I feel good about how we're positioned. No one out there should take that as me thinking the five autonomous FBFs, the so-called power, are going to run off away from people. That's not a suggestion at all. I think we're really good partners with them. All of our conversations have been about the 10 of us and how are we moving forward. That's the great thing about our partnership with the College Football Playoff. We're all linked together. And so I think that's incredibly important for us from a strategic point of view. But, again, we've got to do better.
I know one of your chief frustrations was with the name, image, and likeness. The NCAA did not come up with a comprehensive plan for everybody, so it's sort of state by state, school by school, situation by situation, and that's going to be probably volatile and chaotic.
Yeah, it is. Without a national standard, there's going to be different standards across the country. And some of the states have put in standards, not so much for the benefit of the student athlete, but for the benefit of their coaches and recruiting. I mean, that's how crazy this has become. I'd like to think we'll get there with Congress perhaps acting on that, I hope sooner rather than later. But we missed the opportunity. Again, there were some strategic decisions we made that weren't the right decisions. And it's always easy to Monday morning quarterback these things, right? But we said early on we should have been challenging some of this. We didn't. And then we didn't move quickly enough to develop our own standards. So here we are. We can't have that occur with other things.
Name, image, and likeness. I think a lot of people, general fans, think this will be another boon for the big boys and another disadvantage for schools such as those in the Mid-American Conference. Others see it as maybe a little bit the other way. How do you see it?
Yeah, I really don't view it as changing the landscape all that much. I think there are going to be some student athletes that perhaps have some remarkable opportunities. And it is going to be important we get some guardrails around this so that these aren't used as inducements for recruiting and things like that. And we have some enforcement mechanisms. But there are going to be some student athletes that benefit. All student athletes that get engaged in this are going to benefit from an educational point of view. This is going to be a great multidisciplinary educational opportunity in branding, marketing, communications, biz law, tax law, all of these sorts of things. And I think when we look back in a couple years, the waters have settled. I think the next 2 years, no one knows what's going to happen. And I don't think sponsors know what they're looking for, what they're going to get in terms of return. As we figure all that out, we're going to find out that it's not necessarily the star quarterback that's always getting it done. It's that really innovative, unique media influencer who's a cross-country kid or a volleyball kid that's bringing 500,000 Twitter followers with them. That's where I think the value and a lot of that's going to come. But it's going to take a lot of time and effort and dedication. There's going to be a lot of student athletes that don't want to mess with that. That's okay. There's going to be others that will put in that time and effort. They should benefit from it.
John Steinbrecher, MAC Commissioner, is with us. College football playoff. The push is to move to 12. Of course, it's not going to be that way this year. The contract with television is sort of binding right now, but is moving to 12 pretty well a done deal? It's just a matter of when?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a done deal, but I think there's I like the body language around it from the all the actors on the field. We've had several meetings on it. I think it's reasonable consensus, but we haven't had a vote, and so there's some work to be done. There is a question, could we perhaps start it with the, in 2 or 3 years rather than waiting 5 years to get there? I hope so. I really think this would be a really enhancement to college football. It'll make more games more important throughout the length of the season. We'll play in that playoff. If we get to a 12-win playoff, it'll make more games in this conference important. And more games, everybody says, oh, it's a great thing for the group of five schools. It's a great thing for every conference. Right now, with the 14 playoff, by the time we get to the end of September, we've played a third of the season, you probably have 10 or 12 teams that are still in the hunt for the playoff. We go to this expanded field, we'll get into early, mid-November and have 40 to 60 teams still in the hunt for the playoff. That brings greater relevancy. That's going to lead to increased ticket sales, increased television ratings, increased interest around college football. That's a real positive.
No doubt about it. And when you look at the Mid-American Conference specifically, as we talk about television, I think it was last year maybe or before 19, the pandemic sort of fogs my memory, you re-upped. You feel good about where the conference is with their football television package?
Yeah, we've got 5 years remaining on our deal. And so we're spending time now thinking about what's next. And who knows, 5 years from now, with digital becoming more and more important and more commonplace, how big a role is that going to play? How much more value is that going to bring? Are there other broadcast partners that might be out there that would have an interest? Who knows? We have a great partner in ESPN. They've been wonderful to work with. It's been a reasonably fair deal, finally. But we'll look forward to what the future holds on that.
Speaking of the future, when you look at the Mid-American Conference now moving forward out of the pandemic, how do you feel the conference navigated its way, not just with football, but with everything, through a very trying year?
We did a remarkable job last year. We crowned champions in 24 sports. That was amazing. I couldn't believe it. And then we had great success along the way. 2-0 in bowl games, two top 25 teams, winning a game in a men's basketball tournament for the third year in a row. And I could go down a litany of other sports that we did really, really well. We played so many more games than I thought we would across the board. It was just phenomenal. That speaks to, one, our medical advisory group did a great job of laying out protocols and procedures for us to follow. The teams, the student athletes, the coaches did those things. They were disciplined, and we had good fortune along the way. All told, last August, September, if you'd have told me we would be able to play all 24 sports, I'd have said not a chance. We did. I was really proud of that.
And not to get in the weeds, but on the financial side, do you feel the conference navigated itself to where you came out of it okay?
Yeah, we did. We actually distributed more money than we had budgeted. I think we were one of two conferences that did that. And we did a couple things, and that's despite the fact that we had revenue cuts, TV contracts and other things, just because of, you know, fewer games, et cetera. We made some strategic and prudent and hard decisions, and, you know, we had personnel changes, we changed how we ran things and did things, and we conserved capital so that we could get dollars back to the institutions. That was important, and we did that, and I'm really proud of that.
John, final thought. What are the protocols this year around COVID-19? We see some things popping up at the Olympics. Is it going to be play or not, or are we going to have the ability to move games as you see it now? What are you looking at?
Well, a couple levels. Let's start from an individual level. Right now, if you're unvaccinated, you will be in a weekly testing protocol. Vaccinated student athletes, coaches will not have to test unless they are symptomatic. Unvaccinated players will also have to quarantine if they have a close contact with someone who is infected. And then there are masking requirements based on what's going on, your community you're in, et cetera, et cetera. From a team competition standpoint, as we sit here today, we are not setting any minimum roster thresholds, nor are we planning to reschedule games. If you can't play the game because you can't field a team, you'll take an L.
Commissioner, always appreciate you checking in with us. Here's hoping to a full and prosperous season.
Absolutely. Look forward to seeing you at some great games this year.
Well, it sure was good to talk football again at the Mac Media Day in Detroit. And we look forward to September 2nd when BG opens the season on a Thursday night at Tennessee. Coming up here in the next week or so, we will have another Ziggy Cast. We're going to talk name, image, and likeness and how it might affect college athletics and how it might affect you as a fan and or booster or a sponsor who might want to have one of the athletes work for you or be a spokesperson for your business, those kinds of things. We're going to delve into that here very soon on the next edition of the Ziggy Cast, so stay tuned. Until then, this is Todd Walker saying, "Hi, Ziggy Zumba."
Thanks for listening to the BGSU Ziggy Cast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review however you listen. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.